Welcome to Historically St. Pete, a weekly conversation where we explore the stories of our past that make this community so unique. Hi, my name is Ruby Frias, and I consider myself the luckiest man in Tampa Bay because I have the honor of being the executive director of the St. Petersburg Museum of History. A week ago, I also considered myself the luckiest man ever because I got to talk to a childhood hero of mine, Big Daddy Clyde Best, one of the original rowdies dating back to 1975. And today, in that vein, with us, we have the opportunity to speak with Dan Egan. Dan is the director, producer, and creator of Transforming the Beautiful Game. Dan, welcome.
Nice to be with you. So excited to be showing the movie Tampa, St. Pete.
We can't wait to see this. So, Transforming the Beautiful Game. As we, when we talked to Clyde, we talked a little bit about it, and I got to be honest, I was geeking out on the soccer end of it, right? Because, you know, I spent a good part of my life in pro soccer as the media marketing person for the Tampa Bay Rowdies, the original Tampa Bay Rowdies. So Clyde and I spoke a lot about the sport and what it was like here in you know, to come to an area like Tampa Bay in 1975, where this, you know, the game wasn't played by but about 12 different people. And he was part of that soccer revolution that brought soccer here. So we did get to talk a little bit about the film, and he gave us some great insight, but I want to talk a little deeper about it. So Transforming the Beautiful Game, right? This is a firsthand look at the iconic, groundbreaking journey and impact of Clyde Best. He was the first black football superstar of the modern TV era in England. He definitely becomes a legend here in the United States when he joins the Rowdies in 1975, at that time when they played in the North American Soccer League. The Rowdies were an expansion franchise playing in the old Tampa Stadium in the old Sobrero. And he became an instant star here. But even before that, he was one of the first black athletes to play in the English Premier League's first division, now would be obviously the Premier League. Originally from Bermuda, he was recruited to play for West Ham United in London. And West Ham, you know, back in the day, back in the early and mid-70s, there was a TV show here that would show on PBS, actually, called Star Soccer. And for us soccer fans, I mean, soccer is the only sport I've known, being of Portuguese descent. And Star Soccer would be a weekly Sunday show that was an hour long that would show highlights of British games. So we got to know these players before they even arrived in the United States. So as you can imagine, being one of the early black professional players in the first division wasn't easy for him. And before we get any deeper in that, Dan, why? Why did you make this movie? That is the number one question that is being asked. What prompted you to create this documentary film?
Well, as a filmmaker and storyteller, to find a truly untold story is a treasure. And Clyde Best is a treasure. He's a national treasure in Bermuda. He's a national treasure in the United Kingdom. And he's really an unsung hero of America, playing in the North American Soccer League. The North American Soccer League was the most diverse professional sports league of its day. It was more diverse than baseball, hockey, football, and basketball. And when Clyde came from England, where he was the only black face in the stadium for a few years, never mind just on the field, he signaled to the other players from around the world that it was a legit move to come play in the United States. And Clyde was a, you know, a lot of people brush off the North American Soccer League as, you know, the players were old and they were at the end of the career. Clyde Best was in the prime of his life when he came to play for the Tampa Bay Rowdies, just 27 years old, and really, you know, proved it by scoring so many points. So I had always known about the story because in 1983, I played with Clyde's nephew in high school. So I always knew of Clyde Best's story. His nephew, Jerry, always described Clyde as the Jackie Robinson of England. And as a young boy, I had watched Clyde play when he would come up with the Rowdies or the Timbers to play the Boston T-Men. So I had seen him play, and then I got to meet Jerry, and I learned more about the story. And as my career took off, and you know, in the late 90s and 2000, I got reconnected with Clyde Best in Bermuda in 2015. And so we've been really on a 10-year journey to produce this film.
I can't even imagine the story. You know, because when I sit there, and we're very fortunate that a number of these original Rowdies still live in the Tampa Bay area. And, you know, we get together every once in a while, or you know, either grab a pint or have a conversation or go to Rowdies games. And, you know, you have this conversation with these players. And even Clyde, when we talked to him the other day, about what it was like when you know, and this is 1975, so we're not that far from the civil rights issues of the United States, and those civil rights struggles, you know, from the Freedom Riders and, you know, the lunch counter sit-ins and the protests and the marches, those happened here in Tampa Bay as well. So, you know, you're less than 10 years away from all that. And for Clyde to come to Tampa Bay, and, you know, start off this team, had to be scary. But he seems like he has nothing but good memories of when he arrived in Tampa.
Yeah. Well, Tampa was an opportunity for Clyde because, you know, we have it in the film that when he left England, he flew out with Mark Lindsay, another Rowdies legend.
Yep.
And as they're sitting on the plane coming down the tarmac in Heathrow, Lindsay looks up and he sees Clyde weeping. And Mark Lindsay says to Clyde, "Are you going to miss it? Did you make the wrong decision?" And Clyde says, "No, it's the best day of my life."
Fantastic.
Because he had been playing under so much pressure and strain and abuse for over 8 years in England. And he's a suffering saint. He kept it all inside. He endured it internally. And he was coming to a diverse league. He was going to play with players that looked like him. And it was a totally different experience. I mean, just the fact that when Mark Lindsay and Clyde Best arrived in Tampa, they were greeted at the airport by Farouk. And you have to remember that when Clyde left Bermuda in 1968, by himself, a 17-year-old boy, nobody greeted him at Heathrow.
Right.
So he was on his own, and he got off at the wrong tube stop, and he stood in the rain all day. And finally, a stranger took pity on him and took him to the Charles family, which was the only other black family in the neighborhood. The 17-year-old Clyde Best moved into the Charles house for 6 years. And Clive Charles, the legendary player in Portland,
coach,
with the Timbers, also the most famous black American soccer coach of all time,
right,
was just 14 years old when Clyde Best moved in. So, you know, that's an amazing moment. And then coming to Tampa, you know, I think was a relief. And of course, if you look at the way the Rowdies, the 75 Rowdies played, winning everything, there was a looseness to it. It was the 70s. It was disco. There was a coming of age. And even though it was just out of, as you've said, the 60s and the civil rights tension, there was something special about Tampa because it was a developing sport. These guys were legend. Rodney Marsh and others were paving the way for what the MLS is today.
And you said something earlier that always makes my blood boil when people talk about the league, and especially when the MLS was formed, how the old North American Soccer League was a league of European has-beens. And
yeah.
I just want to punch them. You know, because
I'm
like, I you know, my entire soccer life. I mean, I don't think I missed a Rowdies game, maybe two in my entire life of the original Rowdies, from having to, you know, from being a fan then into working for them for 8 years. But I look at the rosters, and when you mentioned them being diverse, and I was thinking about that first Rowdy's roster with Farouk, with Mark Lindsay, with Arsène Auguste, you were with Clyde. I mean, they were British, they were Scottish, they were, you know, from Bermuda, they're, you know, from Persia, everywhere. And then when you look at the league itself, the number of Latin players, European players, African players, you know, Asian players that came into the league, yeah, much more diverse than any other league probably you can think of the world, right? And at that time, and this is back, you know, when European countries wouldn't let their players go play in other countries, right, in Europe.
Correct. That's right.
And then you look at, you know, you look at the talent, and this is something that, you know, I've spent the last 22 years of my life coaching at St. Pete High, and I would tell these boys, like, look, I was able to sit in a stadium in one game, watch Rodney Marsh, watch Beckenbauer, watch Pele, watch Johan Cruyff. You know, they just go down the list of these amazing guys who were in today they would still be young, right? In the late 20s, early 30s that came over to play. I was there in 75. I was there at the very first game at the Bayfront Center. I was there at every home game, every playoff game. We were there in the stadium to, you know, for the party for the players after they won the championship out in California when they beat the Timbers. The community was colorblind when it came to the Rowdies, I think. Just because they brought this craziness, right? It wasn't like this, you know, strict, you know, staunch rule following thing of baseball. These guys were fun. They had fun accents. They hung out in the pubs. They were accessible. I remember in 1975 in the spring, right before the season started, they were marching in the Festival of States parade in St. Petersburg, walking down the street, juggling soccer balls, and people were ooing on thinking, who are these guys in these little shorts with these soccer balls? Right. It was a different time. It was a great time here, especially if you were a Rowdy fan or a Rowdy. But, you know, like we said, it wasn't always like that for Clyde. And in England, I can't imagine what he had to go through in the early years at West Ham and what some of those other players did, you know, the first black players who cracked the first division.
Yeah, well, you know, they threatened to throw acid on Clyde. And so, you know, that the title of his book is Acid Test. And, you know, Clyde held that in and didn't tell people for years that he got a note in the mail that when he ran through the tunnel, and this is his home field at Upton Park, his home fans were going to throw acid on him. And, you know, when you think of an 18-year-old overcoming that's really quite something. And, you know, Jackie Robinson was 28 years old when he came into Major League Baseball. Clyde Best is a 17-year-old teenager and did not have the support, really, of West Ham when he flew over. And he went right to the first team. You know, he scored 47 goals for West Ham. And it would take another black player 50 years to break that record, you know?
Yeah.
So when you look at what Clyde accomplished under those types of conditions, you know, we don't think there's another athlete that comes that you can name that did what Clyde Best did in any sport, as a teenager, the fortitude, the determination to overcome adversity through excellence and to endure all that. And Clyde will tell you, I'm sure he told you in the podcast, his daddy always told him he was doing it for those who came after him.
Right.
He was doing it for another generation. And when Clyde Best left Bermuda at 17 years old in 1968, the emotional goodbye at the airport, his parents gave him very simple instructions. Be nice to others. I mean that is advice that resonates today, yesterday, and for always. And that is what the noble Bermudian culture is they're nice to everybody. And so when he arrives in Tampa in 75, that is magnified because of the, you know, nobody's throwing bananas at him. like they were in London from the field.
Mm-hmm.
The North American Soccer League was marketed, as you know, to families and women.
That's right.
And my mom took me to the NASL games when I was a lad, young guy. And so it was a totally different atmosphere. People were clapping and cheering and happy to be there. So Clyde is relieved, you know, and of course, you know, scoring one of the two goals in the championship soccer bowl in 75 is legendary. And we found so much footage for this film that Clyde had never seen, including, you know, the soccer bowl and others. In 1967, Clyde Best and his friends went to the Pan Am Games in Canada. And Little Bermuda won a silver medal. They lost in the finals to Mexico in overtime. Clyde Best rang the post in the 88th minute. It didn't go in, so they went to OT, and the Mexicans tucked a few away to win the gold. But that group of players, most of them went on to play in the North American Soccer League, and Clyde Best went to West Ham. So there was a group of players here on the island of Bermuda that were extraordinary, including Sam the Cat Newsom, the goalie for the Cosmos.
Right.
Randy Horton, who was the leading goal scorer for the Cosmos prior to Pele. So it's quite a group that when you walk around Bermuda with Clyde Best, you're just meeting legend after legend after legend.
And you know, touching on something that you just said, in one of my million conversations with Rodney Marsh, he's, and I'm going to kind of paraphrase here, but he was quoted one time in the media saying that, you know, football in America is played in the sunshine in front of fun fans, where, you know, in England, football's a very gray game played in front of very gray fans and under gray skies or something like that.
That's a good one.
Typical Rodney, right? The thing that is unbelievable to me, and you know, you mentioned him going there in 1968, right? It's now 2026, and some of these black players in Europe are still enduring the bananas being thrown at them. Mm-hmm. Right? I can't believe it after all this.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we wanted to tell the Clyde Best story, to bring the conversation back into the culture, you know, bring it back, the conversation around race and sport and overcoming, you know. And, you know, when the two black players missed the penalties in the 2020 Euro Cup, you know, they got abused so much that there was a social media blackout. That's the first time in ever that there was an international social media blackout because of all the abuse that Saka and Sancho and the other received, the three players. So unfortunately, you know, it's still happening. And what this film does is it takes a look at the tension between, you know, in sport and the different perceptions. I mean, one of the challenges of the movie was making the movie relevant in the United States, in Bermuda, and in the UK. And I'm happy to say that, you know, I think that we achieved that. I mean, when we launched the film a month ago in London, we had sold out crowds for a week. Here in Bermuda, we just finished 12 sold out shows. And now coming to Tampa here on May 7th and 8th, we're so excited for the North American premiere, particularly with, of course, the World Cup coming.
Right.
And we can all use that advice, you know, be nice to others. And we can all use Clyde's attitude of, hey, give something back. You know, when Clyde talks to other pro players in all sports, and I've seen him do it with baseball players and basketball players, what are you giving back? What are you giving back to the community?
Right.
What are you giving back to the youth? And that this is how Clyde Best lives his life. So. Amazing movie from that standpoint.
It's funny that you said what you said earlier, because when I was talking to Clyde last week, you know, I basically said, you know, do you consider yourself, you know, the Jackie Robinson of football? And his personality. I mean, I met him numerous times when he was a player, and later on after he'd retired. And his person, I mean, he's like the, when you see him, he's this imposing figure on the field that you'd have to hate to defend against, right? But he's such a nice guy, and that personality is perfect, because like the whole analogy back to Jackie Robinson, Jackie was not Branch Rickey's first choice to integrate baseball. The first one was a black Cuban player, and apparently the story goes that Branch asked him, so what would you do, or what are you going to do when a fan spits on you? And his response was, I'm going to kill him. And next, so his name got scratched off the list, right? And then it went to Jackie. And Clyde has that Jackie Robinson mentality. I mean, it was the perfect guy in the perfect time and the perfect scenario for this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, everybody's born for a time. Everybody's born with a purpose. And those who are lucky or blessed, they know it. And they find it, and they excel at it. When Clyde Best was 10 years old, he turned to his brother and said, one day I'm going to play for West Ham. Now, that's amazing that story had been verified. You know, we get multiple people to tell us that story.
Oh, my gosh.
And then, of course, he ends up playing for West Ham.
Sure.
And the destiny of what it took to get there, the silver medal and the Pan Am Games, you know, all of those pieces lining up, you couldn't write a story like this. You couldn't make it up. The fact that he lived with Clive Charles and then got reunited with Clive Charles.
I didn't know that. That's an amazing story, the Clive Charles story.
It's an amazing story. Yeah. And, you know, Clive Charles coached men and women Olympic teams, coached all, you know, the coach behind the success of the early women's World Cup teams, you know, that wins a national championship and men and women at University of Portland. I mean, this Kobe Jones says when he first met Clive Charles, he knew he had a future because he was the first black coach he ever met.
Yeah.
And, you know, so Clive Charles and Clyde Best, you know, revolutionized what we see today. And, of course, in 1971, Addie Coker, who went on to play for San Diego and Boston and
Toronto.
And, yeah, has five caps for the U.S. national team. Clyde Best and Addie Coker, the first time any two black players start in one game in the first division in English football in 1971. 1972, West Ham starts three black players, Clyde Best, Addie Coker, Clive Charles. And when you think about the racism of the day, that wouldn't happen again for another 6 years until you get to West Brom and the 3 degrees.
Yes, yeah.
So you know, these guys were so far ahead of their time. They were breaking down barriers. You know, 43% of the Premier League today are black players, international black players.
Absolutely.
And the MLS is considered one of the most diverse leagues in the world, and the front offices are considered one of the most diverse front offices of any sport in the world. So, you know, there's really a lot to stand on here for what Clyde Best, Clive Charles, and Addie Coker did and how it bled over to the U.S. and how those three players impacted the game and what we're going to experience here with the oncoming World Cup.
Exactly. Exactly. So this powerful film, right, is going to be shown May 7th, 8th, and 9th at the Palladium Theater in St. Petersburg. You can get tickets by going to mypalladium.org. Whether you're a soccer fan or not, this is a must-see film. I have every intention of being there. I've already got my stuff sorted out to be there on the 7th of May, the opening night, to see this. So, Dan, listen, I want to thank you so much for this insight. You and I could probably be sitting here talking about Clyde and the NASL for like an hour, but they're going to unplug the recording stuff here in a minute, I think. So, but again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much. ClydeBest.com, and you can see where we're going all over North America. And I look forward, I'll be in Tampa Sunday night, so I look forward to seeing everybody in Tampa St. Pete in this coming week.
Perfect. Again, thanks. And folks, thank you for tuning in to Historically St. Pete here on Radio St. Pete. Join us again next week.